We have Mike Brown, who is the Director of Operations. Welcome, Mike.
Good morning.
So you've been to our old studio with an old hat when you were working for the borough, and I think, in fact, you might have been there twice. I know you were there at least once, maybe.
I think
maybe
just
twice.
Once.
Maybe
if
one
I recall.
Time. One time. Okay.
Yeah.
And at that point, you gave a wonderful description of projects that were going to be underway in the district, and in part because we had an incredible amount of building going on, still going on, finishing up. And then you most recently have moved over to the school district, and you have sort of two wings. One wing that covers some of that aspect that you had with the borough, but you've also picked up an oversight over IT. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yep.
Okay. So you must have a varied background. Maybe share with listeners who didn't listen the last time or weren't aware of how you got to be here, of something of your background. Where'd you come from? And how long you've been in Alaska?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll start out, and I was military in a previous life, I guess, U.S. Army retired, and that gave us the opportunity to come up to Alaska back in the mid-90s. So that was our first experience. We were stationed down at then Fort Richardson, and, really just loved the place. And we spent most of our time at that point in the Anchorage area.
Right, okay.
We were a little younger then and really didn't have a good appreciation for what Alaska meant, or what it meant to live in Alaska. But we did love it. The military decided it was time to, move on. That's what the military does. They move you around to where they see fit. So we went off and for another decade kind of charted around and did various things. Made it back up here in 2005.
Okay.
And when we got up this time, we realized, we didn't really want to stay in the Anchorage area. So we moved out to the valley. We've been out in the valley since then. Bought a place just outside of Palmer, and figured, quite frankly, at that point in time in my career that we'd probably be here for about 3 years, and then the military would move us on again. So here we sat 10 years later. Mm-hmm. It ended up working out where we were able to stay here long enough before the military decided it was time to move again, and we just decided for our family the right thing to do was to go ahead and put down some roots and stay here. So we love it, and I guess at this point we consider ourselves Alaskans. We've been up here for quite a time between the two tours, and just very fortunate, I think, that the timing of things worked out to where we could actually make a decision about where we wanted to live. So we bounced around for 20-plus years, and here we are. So it was a great opportunity to kind of find a fit in a community, and it had always kind of been, I guess we could call it a dream at some point, but, it was always fun in the military to know that you were serving your nation and all that kind of stuff, and that's great, but it didn't have a lot of real strong local community ties.
Right.
So it was really fun to get into a place like the Valley, and a place like Palmer, and really kind of look for an opportunity to serve at the local level. Did a short stint with the federal government on J-Bear on base, and decided that wasn't, really what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then opportunity opened up with the creation of the Capital Projects Department for the borough.
Right.
So took advantage of that opportunity, which is, fantastic not to have to commute into Anchorage anymore. But that really opened my eyes to a number of things and really created a lot of opportunity to really learn more about the valley, the infrastructure in the valley, where the growth is. And kind of be a part of, road bonds, school bonds, and all of the construction aspects of what the borough's involved in. So that was a lot of fun. But obviously it created a tie to the school district.
Right.
With all the school bonds, the $214 million package that we were working on at that time. And an interesting opportunity presented itself where the school district was going through a little bit of a reorganization and created a position for oversight, as you described, of called it operations, but
Right. Really
it means oversight of the operations and maintenance department and the information technology department. So Which is kind of interesting. You look at
those.
Well,
yeah, that's because I know listeners may be familiar with the term operations, and I certainly am. The operations of the station, for example, in one thing. So tell a little bit about that.
Sure, and it's part of the business and operations side of the school district.
Okay.
So you know, you have your finance, your purchasing, nutrition services, transportation. You have all your facilities, operations, and maintenance, and then all of your technology. I may have missed something in there, but generally speaking, that's kind of what's on the business and operations side of the house. And the operations and maintenance is, you know, fairly straightforward. I mean, you have a number of facilities spread out across all the various school sites, across the borough, across the district.
Sure.
So, you know, you have those folks that are involved in those maintenance activities, you know, so fixing things, you know, various trades, electricians, plumbers, and whatnot. But you also have all of our custodial workforce.
Right.
So I really was kind of surprised maybe a little bit, but certainly impressed and somewhat amazed at the amount of work those folks do at sustaining our facilities. So that was a part of it. But then you look at the technology piece and, you know, at first glance, you may look at it and kind of go, well, that doesn't seem like that's a natural fit. You know, but as things evolve, I think with, you know, kind of this idea of an information age and technology really invading, if you will, our space and really just becoming, and I guess, you know, I was reading and this was an interesting idea, was this idea of technology as a fourth utility.
Right.
So you kind of think of gas, power, water, which is kind of, your more of your traditional facility side of the house. But then certainly, I think anywhere, even in your home, you know, with, you know, wireless access and access to the internet, you know, folks are really starting to come around to where there's a pretty clear expectation that will just be available, you know, ubiquitous, if you will.
Right.
And that's interesting, you know, to see that kind of evolve over time. Because I know when I grew up in kind of that world, it wasn't that way. But I think where it's evolving to is it's becoming essentially a fourth utility where folks would look at it and kind of expect that just like you walk up to a faucet and turn your water on or flip a light switch and a light comes on, that when you pick up a device, you're going to have access.
Sure.
So when you kind of think of it, I kind of think of it from the administrator and teacher perspective is you know, infrastructure is infrastructure. I don't think they really care too much about who's doing what. They just need it to work.
Right, right. So that's and the interesting thing, your position is director position. So that's a pretty high level position within the school district structure. The superintendent and assistant superintendent, but the directors are overseeing these large chunks of what the district does.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah, and one of the things that was kind of interesting because I think district administration was kind of looking, well, how do you shape this thing so that it's, you know, you have the right span of control?
Right.
So I do have a great deal of help from, we do have a director who oversees the day-to-day operations of the operations and maintenance department.
Sure.
Obviously, they're spread out, and that would be a lot for one person to oversee on a day-to-day basis. So I oversee the day-to-day operations of the information technology department and then have kind of that executive oversight, if you will, over the operations and maintenance department. But we have a director there, Jim Estes, who's a huge help.
Okay.
And him and his team do a great job in kind of, you know, keeping things going on a day-to-day basis and doing that. So he serves as a director. The executive director, I guess to some degree, it does elevate that position. I think what's interesting is it does create a bit of an opportunity to make sure that those equities are represented well.
Right.
And obviously they're important. They're important to education because, you know, our facilities need to be in top notch shape. Our technology, it needs to work. So it does kind of create an opportunity, you know, kind of to have that voice heard, but also I think to integrate. You know, mm-hmm. and be a little bit more
because there's always, it seems to me, and in my experience, having worked with the district in a variety of ways, and looking at other large organizations, that there's typically been a tension, if you will, in the case of the district, by ensuring that funding, for example, goes to the front line, to teachers, to classrooms, and so on. And not just at the district, but almost everywhere, every aspect of the country, maintenance, which is an aspect of this operations, this tends to very often be deferred, particularly if you have a budget issue. And secondly, the question I like what you're saying about the infrastructure, because sometimes there's this kind of episodic expense for improving a data system, purchase of new equipment, you roll out the new connectors, and then the in-between time until once again, either there's a need because there's a deficiency or something happens again, but that in-between time is where you make or break the system, in my experience. And so I think what you're doing by bringing attention to this is probably elevating the future. We build some very nice schools, mm-hmm. facilities, and they can go for a short time without a lot of work. But gradually, if you skimp, then that begins to show up.
Absolutely. And probably the single biggest word we spend a lot of time talking about is sustainability.
Right.
You know, whether it's on the facility side or on the technology side is, you know, it's, and that's the thing I think with bonds, like on the facility side, bonding is, it's interesting because, you know, you want to be careful that you don't build out too much infrastructure that you can't sustain.
Sure.
You know, and it was kind of fun with the Reddington ribbon cutting last week to look at that, you know, because I'd heard, you know, you hear from time to time folks questioning, you know, was that the right thing to do? And when you looked at that school, I stood there at that ribbon cutting and looked around and realized that they were over their enrollment for projections for this year and that there's a pretty good likelihood that they'll be at the capacity of that facility by next year. I think you can sit there and say that it was definitely a need,
right?
Because you know clearly there's a difference between educating folks in a portable setting, mm-hmm. you know, in our relocatables, versus an actual hard facility. So, you know, having those students properly housed is important.
Yes,
and I think from an infrastructure perspective, we've been extremely fortunate with the bonds. That it's allowed us to go in and do. I mean, it's not just new school construction with like Reddington and Pathways and the Day School and Iditarod and Denina, but it's also going in and taking a hard look at some of the, you know, flooring, roofing, mechanical systems. You know, so kind of what you don't see that's behind the walls and in the ceilings and whatnot that are very relevant too. So those projects that maybe don't get as much press or attention. Are very valuable to us in terms of making sure we reach the usable life of a facility or even in some cases extending it, because we're not just doing things that are aesthetic or new schools. It's also maintaining the infrastructure that we already have. And I mean, you know, I think the first one that comes to mind when I think of that is Big Lake Elementary School, you know, one of our older schools in the district. You know, we've put a significant amount of investment in making improvements there. And there are other schools across the district that are also getting that attention.
The roof at Trapper Creek.
The roofing bond has gone a long way.
Long way, right.
You know, when we replace those roofs, we're getting a great benefit from that in terms of, like you described, you mentioned deferred maintenance, you know, is addressing those issues as opposed to going in and doing patchwork, if mm-hmm. you will, which is costly, certainly from a labor perspective, over time. So I think we've been very fortunate with this bond, certainly given the current fiscal situation here in the state, to kind of get ahead in some regard. Now, some of that was deferred maintenance that was brought forward.
Sure.
But I think we've stretched that and gotten just about as much as you could get out of it, you know, because, you know, the roofing, some of it, you know, we heard a question about like Palmer Junior Middle. It was just a couple years ago that we're putting on a roof, but that was a section of a roof.
Right.
You know, so as those projects were completed, and some of them came in, you know, under budget, or we really got favorable bids from the private sector. We're able to go back and kind of rescope and continue to advance other phases of those projects because we did get some great value And certainly we're in a pretty competitive environment from a contractor perspective, and that's been very beneficial to us as a district.
Well, let's shift the focus a little bit. One of my favorite areas, in part because we've just put a new transmitter up at mile 90.5 on the Glen Highway in Glacier View, is my understanding that MTA is rolling fiber out to Glacier View School. Is that the last school to receive fiber, or is Trapper Creek? What's the situation
I know Glacier View was on, you know, for broadband, was on a wireless shot or microwave, a shot to get them broadband connectivity to the school. I don't know if they're the last one to actually get fiber to the school. We do have, I would characterize it as broadband to each school. It's just there may be some situations where we actually have that on copper. And again, that's really, I mean, MTA's continuously making capital improvements to their infrastructure throughout the valley. I mean, when you look at like the new school, for example, Reddington, we work with the utilities, you know, you're going into an area that doesn't have a school. Now, all of a sudden you have large power draw, need for gas, obviously, you know, water, septic, and then telecommunications. So I don't know for certain if that's the last school that will be on, you know, if we may still have some circuits out there that are on copper, but we're certainly making strides at that. And we're continuously evaluating, you know, what are those speeds? What does that bandwidth, you know, need? Mm-hmm. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, we made some pretty significant changes to our guest network access and web filtering policies.
Right.
And we're kind of watching it. I mean, last week was the first week of school, but I think we went from, you know, in a given, we were at summer, but we probably had about 1,000 devices that were associated at that time. And it nearly tripled in the first week of school within 4 days. So it's interesting to see that, because as those devices affiliate, then you see those bandwidth needs grow. So I think this year is going to be interesting for us, just kind of collecting that data and taking a look at, well, what did those changes really do? You know, and what does that mean for us in terms of our capacity or network infrastructure and what it's capable of doing? And so we're going to be spending a lot of time this year. I guess I kind of characterize it as revitalizing the network, or really looking at it. Would kind of be the equivalent of kind of your mechanical, kind of the guts, if you will, of like a school. Is that network would essentially be that backbone for us to be able to provide access and connectivity across the district. So we're going to be looking pretty hard at that over the next year, much like you would kind of a neighborhood. If you consider like a subdivision, you know, you're just evaluating how do you modernize and how do you sustain what infrastructure you have out there so that you can build on it. Because certainly we don't, I don't foresee that tapering off at all. Kind of that need for speed, if you will, but that need for access over time. So we're certainly going to need to be posturing so that we are in a position that we're able to support that.
And it's a push-me-pull-you type of situation, because obviously there's been a lot of discussion about changes in pedagogy involving distance delivered or materials, access to variety of ways in which schools can share instruction, and all of this built upon the concept that there is access anytime, anywhere to do what you need to do. And I guess that's the other interesting spinoff from what you said earlier. As a utility, you expect it to work. I mean, if I flip the switch on, I expect the power to be on. And I think that's a very clear thing that as a person with whatever device they have turns it on, they expect to be able to connect and not be waiting or finding any difficulties. So it's we're approaching that zone. And the fascinating question is how that affects well, for example, let's circle on back to operations and maintenance. As a radio station, we are particularly interested in how our equipment is doing at relatively remote sites, transmitter sites, et cetera. So we have all kinds of devices to report error conditions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. As we've moved on, particularly with the newer schools, something like Reddington, maybe describe a little bit, is there a reporting mechanism that utilizes connectivity of the internet so that you get warnings about how things are going in different schools?
Sure. Much like building controls or automation, we have network monitoring capability. That's one of the things that we want to see improve over this next year pretty significantly because, you know, a big part of that framework or having that in place to allow us to collect that data is to inform future decisions. So about where we procure services.
I mean, sure.
When we go out and buy services from an MTA as an example or any other telecommunications provider, I mean, there's a significant cost that goes along with that. So we want to make sure that as we make those decisions, we have the data that supports the need or allows you to kind of justify what you're doing. So we certainly have some room for improvement in that area simply because things are changing, you know, and it's changing pretty quickly. But the tools are out there to do that so that we can make sure that we're doing the right things and that that utility, if you will, is able to support the needs of those that are in those schools. And, you know, and along those lines of that utility, I think that's where the expectation for folks is going.
Right.
And I think really the question when I look at it from my perspective is, are we able to meet that expectation? And really, is there a shift in our mindset to get there? Because I think, you know, my experience, at least in different organizations as it relates to technology, is that's not a given.
Sure.
You know, and,
right.
and I mean, certainly if you're an ISP or telecommunications provider, you get it because that's the business you're in. You know, but I think in the past, you know, a lot of IT departments have been in this idea of supporting staff and those types of things. And I think the environment's changing, certainly in education. I mean, you really just you have to be pretty flexible.
Right. That's staff support aspect is still there, but this is what you're pointing to. It's more than just that. That's not
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I'm here with Mike Brown, as Director of Operations for the Matsuburo School District, Mike Malevsky, and we're continuing an interesting discussion about just what is covered under operations at the school district. You know, listeners may be interested in particularly the new schools set up for such a mundane thing as lighting. These days, there are apps on your phone. There are all kinds of automated devices. There's particularly a move into LED lighting, for example, in homes that will, in fact, turn on motion sensor light system. So you walk into a place, the light goes on, light goes off. So it's not burning 24/7 in a place, et cetera. Was any of that built into the new structures? And what kind of lights are in the new buildings, for example?
Absolutely. I mean, we're pretty much headed LED.
Okay.
You know, as far as moving forward now, obviously we have a lot of schools out there that do not have LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the components of the energy bond that was part of the $214 million package. A lot of that is putting in lighting. I think we're doing gym lighting at 14 schools. So where we're going in and replacing old lighting with LED lighting, which allows us to get kind of that level of the brightness that we desire. But, you know, and certainly there's a capital investment
sure.
into LED lighting up front. But that cost savings over time in energy usage and then just replacing, you know, those lighting systems over time, it's definitely in our best interest to go ahead and move in that direction. So the newer schools like the Reddingtons, Denina's, Iditarod's, Pathways, we're putting LED lighting in there as part of those new builds. But then there is also part of that energy package. We're revisiting some of the older schools and making that transition to LED lighting as funding permits.
Okay, because obviously the city of Palmer, for example, had begun their replacement program for street lighting, and the initial reports on savings, energy savings, said that this is a no-brainer. Over a period of time, you just save so much that initial investment is recouped pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other areas that we have not talked about that are similar in terms of changes in the what people can expect to see in schools? I mean, my memory, for example, of the lighting is you go into a gym that's dark and you flip the switch and very slowly the lights come up, turn on. a lot of these things I would think would be you know, beneath the skin of schools. Is there anything else we have missed about, for example, fields? I know there've been replacement field surfaces so that, if you have a rainy day, you'll be playing on a surface that will recover quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, obviously, I think folks are probably aware of the four turf fields that went in mm-hmm. early on as part of the bond for four of the high schools. But there's continued work in athletic field improvements. Glacier View is getting a facelift up there. There's some work up at Sioux Valley. Actually, mm-hmm. the synthetic track's going in this week.
Oh, all right.
So they're going through that process, trying to balance that with activities as school's in session.
Right.
But we're moving forward with that. You know, we were very fortunate to get the turf field into the Reddington complex with the
sure.
ball fields and synthetic track. So that sets us up for the future very well. There's some improvements over near the Wasilla High campus and right. Wasilla Middle with the Iditarod ball fields. So we're going to see a facelift and there's ongoing work there. And there's even been some smaller work. Palmer Junior Middles.
I saw that, yes.
Track. There have been a number of field improvements. There were a number of play court improvements at some of the elementary schools that were completed last year. That was all done as part of the athletic field improvement portion of that bond.
So those are very, very visible things. Another very visible thing, and I know in the past I've listened to you talk about access, particularly with the newer schools out to the west. I would be remiss if I did not ask you to comment about access to the Colony schools, the middle and high school, as well as Palmer High School. I saw the sign yesterday that said, Arctic is now open. And I looked and I said, okay, there are different definitions for open. Mm-hmm. So any comments?
Yeah, the Bogard Road project, and that was one we had when I was over at the borough, is you know, frankly, I'm very excited to see it moving forward. I mean, that's a project when you consider phase one that was talked about in the community back in, you know, 06, 06, 07, 08. So it's nice to see it finally come around. I think when the borough finally is able to kind of wrap that up, I think folks are going to be very pleased with the impact. I mean, when I actually am a Colony school parent, so experiencing that closure, and it's just amazing what that small segment of road being closed, that intersection of 49th State Street up there by Colony High School, with that being closed, what that does to the Palmer-Wasilla Highway in the mornings. And I'm sure folks that are maybe even listening or they're out there on the Palmer-Wasilla, it's tough. But I think, you know, that's going to be short-lived. I mean, the pain will end soon. Fortunately, I'll give credit to the contractors and to the borough. I think they did exactly what we needed them to do by getting out of the parking lots of the two high schools,
you know,
Palmer and Colony. That could have been really brutal if they were still in there doing work. So getting that paving, seal coating, striping, all the grading, I mean, all of that work done before school started, was a pretty heavy lift. And you know, it looks like the rural segment of Bogard Road that the borough was working on last year's pretty ready. It's, mm-hmm. You know, I've seen paving on both ends of it. So it's just finishing up the Arctic Avenue slice up here by Palmer High and then really the roundabouts up there by Colony High and Middle, which it looks like they're making pretty good progress. It looks like the pedestrian tunnel was in last week and they were kind of finishing fill on that. So that's, you know, I think that folks, when they kind of see it done, And it's not to say that all the landscaping will have taken hold by then, but I think when they see the improvements and consider the fact that, you know, those Bogard Road improvements were all state legislative grant.
Right.
You know, so the local community, you know, that wasn't part of the road bond package. That was all a series of state legislative grants that came over time. That's a pretty good deal.
And a complicated project because it goes through, it has a component in Palmer where the city of Palmer has to deal in part with the infrastructure of utilities, you have the borough, and DOT involved in that too.
Yeah, I think if you really consider it, and I know most folks probably don't appreciate what goes into this, but when you consider the partnership between the school district, the borough, DOT, I mean, it's, you know, the city of Palmer, because a lot of folks, they see road construction. One of the neat aspects, the city of Palmer has been able to leverage a state grant to extend their water line west, clear out the Colony schools.
Right.
And when you consider growth in the future and utilities again, kind of that infrastructure, that's huge. That's huge because they really only have another short segment for the most part to really kind of bring all that together. So it was neat to see just, you know, government working together to figure it out. Actually, that segment of road between 49th State Street West to Trunk Road actually is DOT's road. So the borough's in there doing work in DOT's right away with a state legislative grant. And the city of Palmer tying in with their water line extension. So,
and when we say borough and DOT and the city of Palmer, we have to also be reminded, as I do, that they're private contractors that are hired to do portions of these. It isn't if a state worker comes in and digs that.
Absolutely true. I mean, I've talked about this before. You know, what's interesting really with all the bond projects, whether it's roads or schools or whatnot, it all involves a partnership with the private sector. You know, whether you're working with architects and engineers on the design side or construction management, or whether you're working with general contractors on the construction side, those folks are a huge part of being able to do what is being done.
Right. Okay. Well, Mike, it's been a pleasure having you here. We have a couple of minutes. Have we missed anything? We've covered an awful lot of ground here. And any other points you'd like to share with listeners about what's happening at the school district under the umbrella of operations?
No, I think we've touched on most of it. I think, you know, there's just this is a neat opportunity because with some organizational change brings an opportunity to kind of challenge the way we do things, you know, so that we can look at things like sustainability and go, well, you know, why are we doing what we're doing, on kind of the operational side of things, to really kind of look at how to, you know, are there any cost savings to be realized? Are there better ways to do things? You know, like we've talked about, you know, energy control and building automations and, you know, is there savings to be garnered by going through and putting in improved infrastructure that allows you to monitor and control? And certainly there is, and some of that's being incorporated into bond projects. We're looking at those things just like we talked about on the network side in terms of, you know, having data to make decisions about how we procure services so that we're, you know, making the best decisions we can to allocate the limited resources that we have. So I think that's one of the things that's been kind of fun is with this shift, recent shift, is it's really provided a good opportunity to kind of challenge some of those processes and the way we do things and maybe consider doing things in a slightly different way. So it's been a lot of fun so far.
Well, obviously, it looks like you're enjoying what you're doing. Well, thank you, Mike Brown, Director of Operations from the Mat-Su Borough School District, for coming in this morning. Have a good day.
You too, sir. Thank you.